All right, guys, how you doing?
Hey, y'all.
Yo,
we rebel.
Welcome home.
We're all three of us here. We're all
three
together.
Of us are here.
I know. We're so happy to be reunited, and
we are.
We hope you feel reunited as well.
Absolutely. So let's just jump in. We just want to cover really quickly. We wanted to send support and stand in solidarity with all the NFL players that are taking a knee today. What Trump said at his Alabama rally speech was abhorrent. And I think if you want to express free speech in a nonviolent manner in this country, which is one of the principles that we were built upon. So good job, NFL players, on taking a knee. We're taking a knee verbally with you and I guess physically, but we're not on a field.
So. Yeah. So yeah, other than that, I guess we should just get into it.
Let's get to healthcare.
Let's talk about healthcare.
So we thought that Obamacare was going to be the law of the land and the Affordable Care Act would survive to another day, but the rascally terrible Republicans are back at it
again.
Back at it again. That's bam, the second bam, week in a row I've bam, made that joke, bam. And I apologize. So yeah, this repeal of the Affordable Care Act. The Cassidy Graham bill, which is, if you really look into it, we'll talk a little bit more about it, but if you just want to know about how to get involved early, go to fivecalls.org. They will give you numbers for representatives, and if you want to call out of state, you can do that. You could, but there's a script at the bottom. Maybe say that I called and I said that I was an out-of-state resident, but that I was concerned. And whether a senator is voting no or yes, I think it's important to call and either offer support of their decision. I called Senator McCain's office and I said, I support your decision to vote no on this bill. Or if it's somebody like Lisa Murkowski of Alaska or Rob Portman of Ohio or Susan Collins of Maine, just call and say that not only is this not good economically, because Republicans love economics. Not only is it good, not good economically, but
and
it's
Democrats,
not good.
Democrats love economics too.
Yeah, in different ways.
In different ways.
Yeah,
we could be a little more fiscally responsible, but
I just agree, disagree, but whatever.
Do you like to be in debt?
I don't. We'll talk about that.
Okay,
later.
We'll table that. Put a pin in that. But nonetheless, call both sides in support of the no's. And on those on the fence or those who have articulated yes.
Yeah, September 30th is the deadline.
Fivecalls.org. September 30th. That's by the time this podcast comes out. What's today's date?
Today's date is the 24th.
24th. Okay, crunch time, people.
So we'll have about five days.
Almost October.
Wow, time flies.
Happy Halloween.
Time flies when your healthcare is getting taken away.
That's right.
Viciously. It has a 24% approval rating. So, yeah, I guess that's more the most healthcare stuff. I think we can move on. I mean, you know, McCain.
I just would like to gently point out that there's no complete analysis by the Congressional Budget Office that will be made by the time the vote comes up. To circle back to the stereotype that they love economics, they're not waiting for that or giving any space for that. And that's the only thing I wanted to point out.
And
I want
them to get to that point where they realize, okay, now we have to get those 60 votes. Like, yes, work with the Democrats.
Let's all
get together, figure out a solution. Obviously Obamacare needs to be fixed, but you do not need to scrap it. You do not need to put upwards of 30 million people out of insurance. Like, this is, you have to look out for your country. And so I hope they fail at this, and I hope they have to work with the Democrats so we can finally get a solution.
And if you want to look, I mean, you know, when the one thing I will disagree with Senator McCain is he's saying that we need to have a bipartisan approach and not ram legislation through like they did with Obamacare. Obamacare took almost, 1 to 2 years to implement.
Yep.
There were over 100 Republican amendments added on. And then it was passed with a 60-vote threshold. So just to be very clear, Democrats did work with Republicans. If you want to read more about that, there's an article by Jack Moore that he wrote for GQ called Democrats Tried to Make a Deal for a Bipartisan Healthcare Fix. Republicans walked away. Not only that, Lamar Alexander, a senator from Tennessee, I believe, was working on a bipartisan bill that was completely quashed.
And also just one thing, this is not referencing an article, but the whole thing with Jimmy Kimmel this week, as you saw, like he, you know, really laid into Cassidy, because, you know, Cassidy came on his show and said, like, yeah, we will work for someone like you in the country, Jimmy, who, like, you know, they have a child that is in desperate need of care. And, you know, there are people in this country that can't afford it. And how dare he, you know, basically try to pull at his heartstrings and make you think, oh yeah, we totally have your back, and then turn around and do this. And Kimmel was absolutely right to be so upset on his show and dig into that. And I feel like that's really on display to show what the Republicans are thinking of us as a country. They're just saying like, we'll do what we want to do. You have to just fend for yourself.
And also what I appreciate about Kimmel saying that is that, I mean, Kimmel's a celebrity. So if something happens to his kid, he has financial resources that others don't. But he is making the point, you know, as a fellow American, he's standing up for those that don't have his type of platform or space. So, yeah. You know.
And listen, if you're going to complain that a celebrity has an opinion, you're also probably going to complain if they say they're not going to vote. So
also, Donald Trump was a celebrity. So if you like, come on, everyone on the political sphere is essentially a celebrity. So that conversation just needs to end.
It's a little ridiculous. Also,
out of control.
If you want to also just get updates on Twitter, if that's where you are, check out Andy Slavitt. Andy, his last name is spelled Slavitt. He ran the Affordable Care Act, Medicare, and Medicaid for the Obama White House. His Twitter account, he is always up to date on this, always up to date on the votes. And he just tweeted out recently that the National Association of Medicaid Directors from all 50 states came out and issued a very negative statement on the Graham-Cassidy bill. So not only does it have a 24% approval rating, which is probably going to plummet after even a partial CBO score, but the National Association of Medicaid Directors have come in joint agreement, which is a rare thing, against this bill. And it's hanging on by a thread, and we need to cut that thread. So get involved. We're going to have 5 days by the time this podcast comes out.
Mm-hmm. I think we already mentioned it, but so Senator McCain, who's obviously our spotlight's on him right now, he's opposing the Obamacare repeal, referencing this article by from Bloomberg by Laura Litvan and Steve T. Dennis. So essentially, John McCain said, I cannot in good conscience vote for the Graham-Cassidy proposal. I believe we could do better working together, Republicans and Democrats, and have not yet really tried. So like Nick was saying earlier, I'm glad they're recognizing it, and hopefully, you know, we can all like, I don't know, kumbaya over there, and get this and get a solution. But
it's
obviously
such a funny image.
Yeah. I think the solution is single payer healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I don't know why we're so, well, no, I know why they're so afraid of it. There's a lot of hands in pockets with our healthcare sure. system. But anyway, so yes,
let's move on.
Yes. Move on from that.
Trump goes to the UN.
Ugh.
He put on his big boy pants and
he
went
on
to
his big boy pants and he went to the UN.
And he went to the UN.
Yeah. We're trying to gear things now towards how to get involved with each and every issue. I don't know how you get involved with this one besides just sitting there with an open jaw and wide eyes.
Unbelievable.
So,
but believable.
Mm-hmm. But believable. So Trump goes to the UN. David Rothkampf covered this for the Washington Post. And he wrote that President Trump delivered a speech to his alt-right anti-globalist base from the podium of the United Nations General Assembly on Tuesday. He offered a vision of America's role in the world starkly different from any of his predecessors who stood in the same spot before the leaders of the world. In the end, Trump offered up remarks that were antithetical to the ideas and ideals that led Trump to the United States to play a central role in the UN's founding in the wake of World War II. So this speech was highly nationalistic, highly problematic. He used a lot of just
problematic.
It
seems like it's Trump is the walking equivalent of the most downvoted quote in a Reddit message board. Like I feel like, yeah, I mean, the fact that he says in reference to North Korea, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission. Don't give me a Call of Duty code name call Kim Jong Un.
Well,
do not bring in Elton John to this.
I mean, how
Sir Elton. Let him have Rocket Man.
I've seen him perform.
He's amazing.
Yeah. He's at Disneyland.
Oh.
He was at Disneyland.
That sounds like such a happy dream.
He played the Circle of Life and then he kept teasing Benny and the Jets. Oh. He never played it, which was a little I was like, Elton, let's
I would have been sobbing during Circle of Life.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Anywho.
But he kept having to re-record it because it was for the Disney concert series. So they wanted from different angles. So I've heard Elton John play Circle of Life live about 9 times.
I'm
in one
so
sitting.
Jealous of you. I've never been more jealous of you than this moment.
It was pretty cool. So you mentioned North Korea. So he says he threatens genocide against a country in front of North Korea and in front of the
it's
world.
It's just like, it's unbelievable. lack of understanding of the purpose of the UN.
Well, also, it's, I mean, it's also a lack of understanding of how to deal
with humans.
With North Korea, too, because North Korea has
more
had...
more simple than that.
But it's I'm saying this country, it's you always, you know, they make these statements. North Korea is a country that historically likes to saber-rattle. And by responding to them, especially with their nuclear program becoming more more.
Mm-hmm. Especially with that.
Yeah. So North Korea did respond. And this is an NBC News article by Phil McCausland. It said, Kim Jong-un calls President Trump a dotard and a frightened dog. So North Korea's leader called President Trump a frightened dog, a gangster fond of playing with fire in an official statement released Thursday. Kim Jong-un responded to Trump's United Nations speech in a dispatch written in the first person. South Korea's government said it was the first such direct address to the world by any North Korean leader. And he said, far from making remarks of any persuasive power that can be viewed to be helpful to diffusing tension, he made unprecedented rude nonsense one has never heard from any of his predecessors, Kim said. A frightened dog barks louder. Hours later, North Korea's foreign minister reportedly said his country may test a hydrogen bomb in the Pacific Ocean to fulfill Kim's vow. You're like a hype man in the highest level action against the United States.
Another one.
And then he said, I will make the man holding the prerogative of the supreme command in the United States pay dearly for his speech, calling for totally destroying North Korea. And then he said, he referred to Trump as a dotard, and he said, I will surely and definitely tame the mentally deranged U.S. dotard with fire.
Fire. One of my biggest fears.
So,
We're watching two world leaders whip each other's dicks out and be like, mine's bigger. No, mine's bigger. Well, and then we're all going to die.
But and North also, Korea, like, does Trump not understand that the Pacific Ocean borders the country? Like, I don't know what happens when a hydrogen bomb goes off, but I'm assuming it's not great.
Well,
and so, like, they're not, I mean, they're far away from us in the sense that it's the largest ocean on the planet. I get it. But, like, good God.
Yeah, well, there's like a lot of issues. Environmentally, it's bad.
It's going to fuck up the whole ecosystem.
Well, it depends on
the
where
Ocean.
The bomb goes off as well. If it goes off in the air, you know, there's
but either way, that shit falling in the ocean is going to fuck up some ecosystem that's going to end up on our shores, and we're going to be eating like acid or something.
So historically, North Korea is always saber rattled. Responding is the problem, and Trump has a complete inability to respond because he's a narcissistic casino man.
He's provoking. He's trying to make this happen.
So now we've given you healthcare, we've given you the North Korea updates and the UN speech, which is probably has you a little down. So
we're going to bring you right back up.
We're continuing our fun new thing of highlighting a candidate, and this time we're going to highlight David Min.
Woo-woo! Woo-woo!
So, David Min is running for Congress. There's an NBC News article about him. It says, policy nerd Dave Min wants to give up academia for a seat in Congress. And David Min is running against Mimi Walters in California's 45th congressional district, which includes Irvine and several other Orange County cities. So it's home to 700,000. Its population is approximately 24% Asian and Pacific Islander. It's traditionally Republican, but it went Democrat in 2016 with 49.8% of the vote compared to 44.9% for Trump. So this is and if you go to swingleft.org, you can see that this is a winnable district, and this is one you can get involved in, and it's close to our hearts because it's in California. This is a really fun, bio of Dave Min. He is the son of immigrants from Korea. Chose academia. He has gone the law route, but he has felt compelled to get into the race ever since Trump took office and all of his anti-immigrant words. He worked for the SEC, where he worked alongside the FBI to bust up boiler room fraud operations. He worked in securities litigation at WilmerHale, which was a Washington law firm. And he also entered the political sphere as a banking committee counsel for Senator Chuck Schumer. And then when Schumer was made chair of Congress's Joint Economic Committee in 2007, Min became his senior policy advisor and later his deputy staff director of that committee. He was also the associate director of financial markets policy at the Center for American Progress. I love this guy.
It's so happy.
We were like, Nick, let us get a word in. I'm just kidding.
I'm on the Min train.
I know. We support you on the train. I just wanted to say, I think what he said about his parents was really beautiful and kind of highlighted a lot of the conversations that we've been hearing around DACA and other immigration related things. But he says in this article, what brought my parents here was a sense that if you play by the rules of the game, you can make something of your life. And to me, that's the core of the American dream. My parents weren't sucking off the economy. They added a lot of value, not not just economically, but culturally, just as every other immigrant before them.
I love that.
I mm-hmm. love that. And I think it circles back to like the point of America, you know, like not, I mean, we have a huge problem with, you know, how we treat the Native Americans that we do need to address and work on. But the vast majority of people in our country were immigrants at some point. So I think that, you know, bringing light to circling back to the concept of the American dream and how that's why people move here. They don't move here because they want to steal jobs. Right. You know, they want to make something of themselves. And I also appreciate how he pointed out it's not just economic, it's cultural. Like when you ask people in, you know, even in LA, like, what's your favorite restaurant? Never do they ever say an American food place. Right. In my experience.
What is America?
You know?
What's your
cheeseburgers? That's it.
That's German. Kind of.
Yeah.
American, all we have is jazz music and country music, but we don't even have. You
and
know
Ryan Gosling did not invent that.
Well, Ryan Gosling's also Canadian.
Oh, so lies. La La Land, full of lies. You know, the only thing I want to add to this, though,
absolutely.
Is that.
I thought you were going to go on an anti La La Land tirade.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast.
I like that movie. I enjoyed it.
Let's focus.
It shouldn't have beat Moonlight. I think Democrats are pretty economically sound, and La La Land was a pretty good movie. Let's move on.
Let's move on quickly.
How dare. No, all I want to say is, if anything, men should be a great inspiration to those thinking like, wow, how can I get involved? I don't know what to do. Like, listen, you could be, you know, a skateboarder who has never listened to a politician speak in your life, but if something moves you and you feel like you want to get involved, you want to help people, you can run for office. Like it can start from nothing and go mm-hmm. so many places. And we'll talk about this with Lex in our interview, but it really just starts with what moves you and what speaks to you. And so this is a perfect example of that. And we wish him the best of luck and hopefully he gets some traction.
I think so too. I think also, you know, Mr. Min has a lot of history working in politics and is a lawyer. But what James was saying, I think if you're not that, still run for office. We need more scientists. You can check out Team 314. There are a bunch of scientists that are running for office. We need artists. You know, Mr. Min is one of the candidates that we are covering, but we're going to cover more that don't necessarily have a background in law. If you want to get more involved with Dave Min's campaign, go to www.davemin.com. You can donate. You can get involved. I know we have a lot of California listeners. So, you know, this is a swingable district.
Cool.
Let's move on to
Emily's favorite topic. Oh,
God in heaven. Is it ever going to be over?
No.
Sooner than you think, I think. It's pretty.
God.
Well, anyway, so Mueller seeks White House documents related to Trump's actions as president. This is from New York Times by Michael S. Schmidt. So Mueller, our special counsel and our special friend, has asked the White House for documents and
is
some.
Is he a friend?
We're homeboys.
I think he's a friend to America right now.
Yes. He's asked for documents about some of President Trump's most scrutinized actions since taking office.
Let's text him.
I can text him right now. How but cool then would I'd be part of the investigation. Oh, so it's a whole thing.
Like, can you come
so. Mueller, he's interested in the Oval Office meeting Trump had with Russian officials, in which he said the dismissal of the FBI director Comey relieved great pressure on him, quote unquote. And in July, when the Times put questions on the meeting to the White House, Trump and senior administration officials prepared a response on Air Force One that made no mention of the meeting's real purpose, saying instead that it focused on Russian adoptions. So we've heard that story before. Mueller had asked all the documents the White House had about the meeting. He asked for all of them and all internal White House communications about the statement drafted on Air Force One. So he's getting that stuff. Everything that was behind closed doors, he's asking for it now. And we're starting to put a lot of light on these things we knew were happening. But again, we were being fed some misinformation and frankly, horrible stories.
Yeah. Well, oh, God. So there's been a tech element to this now that is sort of erupting. Mm-hmm. Facebook, we talked about this a little bit ago, but now Twitter. So Facebook is going to testify publicly on the electoral disruption. This is a political article from Elena Shore, where she said that the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman said Tuesday that he expects Facebook officials to appear at a public hearing examining its role in Russian efforts to influence the 2016 election. The social networking giant is under intense scrutiny for its involvement in Russian meddling during last year's presidential campaign and acknowledged earlier this month that it accepted about $150,000 in political ad spending from entities potentially linked to Russia. The Intelligence Committee's top Democrat, Virginia Senator Mark Warner, said Tuesday that he and Burr are in agreement on the public hearing and said that he would also like to see Twitter officials appear to discuss Russian advertising activity on the platform. So that led to Twitter confirming that it's also cooperating with the Russia probe. And there's a Vanity Fair article by Maya Kossoff where she talks about how Twitter said that it's eager to work with governments to help solve the problem and that they're cooperating with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and its inquiries.
And they also said that Twitter deeply respects the integrity of the election process, a cornerstone of all democracies, and will continue to strengthen the platform against bots and other forms of manipulation that violate our terms of service.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. In this article, they mentioned, I believe it was this one, that both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's Twitter accounts, almost if half, if not more than half, are suspected to be bots.
Yeah. Their followers. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very common. Apparently, I didn't realize how easy it is to look that up, but you can figure that out for many verified accounts. But yeah, it's if he says he has a whole bunch of followers, whatever.
Because they're like,
You can also pay for followers too. You know, and the thing is,
you can.
That's a huge
thing. A ton of like influencers do that to get to a certain level so that they start making more money with whatever.
I wouldn't do that,
but
interesting.
Yeah, and you know, I remember because I was overseas when most of the election was happening, and then when the whole advent of fake news, and I hated that term fake news, but this is essentially what that was. You know, you're getting all these ads and propaganda, and you know, it's crazy that Facebook actually took part in that, though. I mean, obviously everyone wants money, and that's why, but it's crazy. I think, you know, maybe this is how people weren't taking the election seriously, that they say, yeah, we'll take money and just put on a whole bunch of propaganda.
Yeah. And then, sorry, I just want to, this literally just broke and it's not on our like list of things to talk about, but like whatever.
Bring it on, Nick.
So Politico, this is a Josh Dossi article. This literally broke today, like while we were recording, or like right before. Kushner used private emails to conduct White House business. And
oh, yeah? What's that like?
What about his emails?
Yeah. It says presidential son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner.
Was it like jkush@gmail.com or what?
I don't think it says what his thing is, but it says that he corresponded with other administration officials about White House matters through a private email account set up during the transition last September. Part of a larger pattern. There's my hype man. The larger pattern of Trump administration aides using personal email accounts for government business. Which was the whole thing.
That was the whole thing.
So
I can't.
I started a lock him up chant,
I think we could do that.
Can we do that?
I don't think it needs to lock him up. I think it needs to be lock them up.
Lock them
up.
Yeah,
there's
all
a few.
Of them.
Yeah, I feel like we can lock, but individual cells.
It says that he used his private email account alongside
of
his White House official. It was alongside his official White House email account, sometimes trading emails with senior White House officials, outside advisors, and others about media coverage, event planning, and other subjects.
Isn't
according
Jay
to
Kush,
people familiar.
Isn't Jay Kush the one that forgot 100 meetings on his thing?
Yes.
So maybe he forgot them because, you know, they were in his Gmail instead of his whitehouse.gov email.
It went to the spam folder.
That's true.
You know, it went to the spam folder.
That's true. That's
even though
happens.
He, you know, had the 100 meetings. So magically they came out of his spam folder and went back in.
Uh-huh. Jared Kushner, I know you're a big listener of the podcast.
Yeah.
Kushy. Yeah, you done fucked up, man.
Yeah. Let's cover our last thing and then get to
our awesome interview. Yeah, let's cover this quick because our interview is way better.
So Betsy DeVos rescinds the key Obama era policy on campus sexual assault. This is a Huffington Post
this
article
is unbelievably
by Sebastian Murdoch. Do you want to?
That's all I have to say. This is unacceptable behavior as a woman, as the, you know, Secretary of Education. This is not your battle. This is not your battle.
And it's
just because you want to undo whatever Obama did, I don't pick something else. Like sexual assault is only you don't get to rescind things that are against sexual assault, especially as a woman. It's fucked up.
So here's what she did. So she rolled back guidance under Title IX on how colleges and universities should handle complaints of sexual harassment and assault. Among other recommendations, the guidance had set forth a lower preponderance of evidence standard for finding that students have had committed sexual assault and thus could be punished. So under DeVos, schools can now raise that standard. In just her first 6 months now, the secretary has also rolled back protections for
Mm-mm.
transgender students
Mm-mm.
and seriously scaled
no.
down campus rape investigations by the education department.
No, this is unbelievable.
Be vigilant where others.
You.
No. This, I have that rage. I have
one
that rage
in
with
four
you.
Four women are sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
So we need to be vigilant where our leaders are not being.
And one of the ways we can be doing that is by, you know, we can protest, we can gather, you can sign petitions. They make a big, big difference. We have a 2018 election coming up. Dave Mann, check him out. He's running against Mimi Walters in California's, I believe, 45th congressional district. Somebody fact check me on that. Am I right about that? If you want to get involved on healthcare, fivecalls.org. You can text the ResistBot 50409. I would recommend calling Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Rob Portman of Ohio, and Susan Collins of Maine. We shouldn't be winning this by one. We should be winning this by 10, and that's what we should definitely be trying to get into. So check out DaveMinn.com. And Emily, what's our interview
and
coming up?
And stick around for my new friend who I just met in Texas, Alejandro Lex Trevino. He is the Deputy District Director for North Dallas, LULAC, which is the League of United Latin American Citizens, and he's amazing. So fast forward through the cool music and listen up.
Or just listen to the cool music.
The music is cool.
Yeah. And make up a dance and send it to
us. Alex Goldsmith made the music, and he's a sweet, sweet friend.
Shout out to Alex. So. Okay, but for real, stick around for Lex. He's great.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, welcome back. We're so excited to have our guest on this week, who I actually had the honor of meeting just a few days ago. We have Alejandro Lex Trevino, who is the Deputy District Director for North Texas for LULAC, which stands for the League of United Latin American Citizens. Hi, Lex.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I'm great.
So, could you kind of give us just an overview or like an introduction to the League of United Latin American Citizens?
Okay. So LULAC is actually the oldest civil organization for Latinos in the United States. Some people kind of compare us to like the NAACP. We've been here working for years, tirelessly working in immigration and social justice and healthcare reform, housing, anything basically that affects pretty much anybody, really, not just Latinos. But I am part of a specific part of LULAC. I'm part of 4871 is my council number, and we're the Rainbow Council. We were actually the first Rainbow Council that was founded to focus on LGBT issues in North Texas, pretty much.
Amazing. And so how did you get involved specifically? Because I know LULAC has been around for a while, and there's layers of councils in high schools and outside of schools. So what was your path into the organization?
So LULAC's always been around for me. I actually founded the chapter in my high school when I was in high school back in the 90s. So that was kind of a big deal for me. I was finding out who I was throughout my teenage years. So part of it was figuring out who I was as a Latino. And then after I graduated, I decided I wanted to find out who I was in other aspects, like going more into the gay culture and, you know, figuring that stuff out. So I walked away from it. And then after a period of finding myself, we'll just say, when I kind of started to settle down and come back to earth, I found out that this chapter had been created, which was a gay, you know, Latino civic organization. And I thought, well, I found my home. You know, this is me in a nutshell. It's everything that I've always worked for or worked towards. And it really helped me to identify the intersections of who I was.
And that's crazy that you started that chapter in high school. Like, how does a high school kid get to do that? Like, that's awesome.
Luckily, I've been raised around this for most of my life. My mom is a social justice activist from way back in the day, and we still partner on a lot today. So I was involved with LULAC and NCLR and Tache and all these different organizations from the time that I was really young. So I just kind of, I picked it up. I knew what was going on, and I was you know, I was woke back in the 90s.
I love that. And so what specifically, you know, once you join the Rainbow Council as an adult, you know, what are some specific examples of programs or events that you all have done under the categories of social justice, economic justice, and so forth?
You know, for me, it actually wasn't about the social justice aspect when I first started. It was more because the Rainbow Council was focusing on sexual health, which is my passion. It's something that I've always worked to, HIV education and you know, seeing a group that was working in this type of education in the Latin community, it really spoke to me. And when I got in, my first thing was, I used to tell people, you know, I'm here because I want to help, you know, educate. I want to help people learn. I want to help people get tested and find resources. And I always just say, I'm not into politics. Like, that's not my thing. I'm not really big on the politics side of this. I just want to help my community in this way. And the good thing is the council always focused on different things. But as time passed, you know how I said about the intersections of myself, it's the same thing with society in every group. It's like, when it came down to it, I had to start learning things. And I was like, you know, this is all politics. Everything that has to deal with HIV and funding and education of students in schools, it all comes down to the politicians. And so I had to get involved in politics. I had to start figuring out who were the ones that, you know, stood behind us and helped to educate and helped to better the community, and who were the ones that were fighting against that. And that's kind of where my passion for politics came from. And when I found that out, well, it opened a lot of other doors for me within the council, so that I could start learning more about how elections work and how, you know, voter registration and voting works and how to educate yourself and how to get real information about the people who are running your county, your city, your state, you know, all the way up the line. And so it just, it kind of, that's where that passion came from.
So between the 90s and today, like, what do you think has changed? What do you think has, you know, gotten better in the work that you've done?
Well, one of the biggest things is that I'm now married.
Congratulations. Yay.
Yeah. Marriage equality is one of the biggest things that I can think of, you know, that's been something we've worked towards for a long time. But with that, I feel like there's a lot that's still going on today that is still either in the same place that it was in the 90s, if not regressed a little bit. There's still a lot of fight. There's still a lot out there. You know, it's great that I was able to marry the partner, my partner, the person that I love. But, you know, I'm still looking at families who are being torn apart that are having issues with immigration. You know, it's things like that, that it's kind of like the fight never ends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess. Yeah. Like, on that note, what are things that have specifically, I guess, gotten better, but some things that we really should be focusing on that we aren't talking about?
You know, one of my biggest things right now that I'm working on is immigration reform. Everything that has happened here in Texas specifically, you know, with SB4 coming down the line, that was hard, and it's still hard. People don't realize that SB4 is not gone. It's in case you're not aware, it's called the Show Me Your Papers Law here is what we call it. And that's where they're giving our local law enforcement the right to act as immigration or ICE enforcement. So people are scared naturally. You know, they feel like, you know, you can be stopped at any moment and someone can just ask you, hey, do you have your papers? And it's sad because it's affected the community. Just the idea of it, just the conversation has affected our community so negatively. You know, we have clinics that cater to immigrant populations here that are losing their people. They're just not, people are not coming in. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not seeing the doctors. They're not reporting crimes because, you know, this is the fear that they have, is that if they report a crime, that they'll be the ones that are going to be turned around and you know, they're going to be deported. But that's one of the biggest things. And then with SB4, you know, now you have DACA coming down the line where DACA has been rescinded. So now you have these students who've known nothing but this life being threatened to be deported and taken to a place where they've never been, that they don't understand, that they, you know, some people don't know anything about. So those are some of the main things that we're focused on right now. Of course, with the tragedies that have been happening lately, LULAC and the council itself, we deal with everything that affects our community. So we did a huge focus on evacuees that were being housed here from Hurricane Harvey, because we just did that the other day, and we raised over, I think it was over $2,000 in supplies and $1,000 in uniforms to kind of help the people who are being housed here from Hurricane Harvey. Mm-hmm. Let's see. SB4, DACA, those are two of the biggest things right now. Helping evacuees are something that's real big. And of course, we keep that trend. Coming up here in October is National Latino Gay Men's HIV Awareness Day. So we'll be doing something with that. World AIDS Day is coming up. That's another big thing. That's like one of my passions that we do here in Texas. We always try to do something different. Plus, right now, we have a huge focus on the midterms that are coming up. We are a civic engagement organization, and a lot of people don't, they vote for the president, or at least they get involved in the discussion to vote for the president, and they forget that there's elections going on all the time. So one of the big things that we like to do is educate people on when to vote, how to vote, and how to learn about the people that you're voting for. We don't tell people who to vote for, you know, but we do try to introduce them to as many candidates as possible. So midterms are coming up, and that's a huge, huge, huge election that's coming up. And we're just trying to make people aware of that, trying to get them, you know, introduced to the process and what they need to do in order to get themselves out there and have their voices heard.
Are there any candidates that you guys are introducing people to right now that we could shine a light on through the podcast?
So we don't officially endorse any candidates. What we do is we kind of invite people out to speak. Because of the type of work that we do, obviously it's more Democrats that pull focus towards us. Mm-hmm. But we do open the door to everybody. You know, there's my own personal opinions. I can tell you there's people out there like Beto who's running against Ted Cruz. That's, mm-hmm. you know, one of the main people out there. I've got my fingers crossed that a couple of different people are going to put in their bid for the president.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I don't want to point out any specific candidates not endorsed by LULAC themselves, but if you ever want just an opinion, I can always tell you some things that I see and people I wish would run for office.
Mm-hmm. We covered Beto last week. We've been doing a new thing about candidates to watch and people to get excited about, and Beto O'Rourke is one of them. So.
Yeah, he's a great guy, man. He has been on the road and he hits every single constituent that he can. He just gets out there and he, you know, he puts it all out there. He's got a lot of heart and a lot of passion, and I think he's the kind of person that we need in office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's interesting too, you know, talking about Beto and talking about all the work that LULAC has done. It's eye to eye work and getting on the ground with people, and I think that that's how you can get people on your side. And so if there is somebody out there listening that wants to get involved with LULAC, what is the best way? Or because you know, you started off through high school and kept up, you know, till now, which is amazing. But there are people that are listening right now that want to get involved. What's the best way that they can just like make their mark day one?
So LULAC is everywhere. LULAC is in every city, every state. Just Google LULAC and then look for near me and you'll find a council. Once you find a council, just get in touch with them. Usually you can get on Facebook and you can start looking up, and there's different events that happen everywhere. Like we do, we're in the protest, we're there, you know, for the marches, but we also do educational events. We also do events with students. We give out an annual scholarship. So there's always something going on where you'll see our name attached. And when you see that, look for the person with the LULAC shirt and say, hey, how do I get involved? And I guarantee you, they're going to say, well, first off, help us with ... today. And we get you involved because we like to start it. And then we say, now come to the next meeting and tell us what you want to do and we'll work with you. Because that's the thing about LULAC is we don't necessarily push any specific agenda. What we do is we ask people who come in, what is your agenda? What can we do to help you? Because you are our community and that's who we work for.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Rainbow Council, I'm curious, you know, what is, so I know the work you guys are doing, but what's the outside reception? Like, how is, with all the work you're doing, is it being received well locally by, you know, just normal citizens? What's the reaction like?
Oh, man. So the Rainbow Council, that's my heart right there. You know, I was the president for the past 2 years. My husband is now the president. When I became district director, I wanted to be able to focus, which has given me a lot more reach into some other councils. And I get to hear the reception. And the thing about it is like, I'm just going to put it out there and say, you know, the Rainbow Council is one of the hardest working councils that we have in North Texas. We get out there and we work and people see it and they know it and they know who we are and they know if they want something done, you know, to come to us, mm-hmm. because that's what we do. The city of Dallas, actually, a couple months ago for Pride Month, which is in June, the mayor of Dallas presented us with a proclamation announcing Pride Month here in Dallas, partially for the work that we do within our community and also with a big focus on what we've been doing with LGBT homeless youth lately. Mm-hmm. So the reception for us here in Dallas, it's amazing. I mean, we work very closely with the DPD here. We work very closely with city council here, with the mayor. Everybody has arms open. The Dallas community, you know, it's my heart. It's where I live. But we're open. We listen. And everybody works together hand in hand to do what's right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, for you, your role, you know, you changed from president of this specific council to being in charge of this enormous district. So beyond intersecting more with the other councils, what are the kinds of collaborations potentially coming out of that? And how has your day to day changed?
Oh, man, it's been great. It's busy. It's busy. It's like a full time job in itself. But it's really good. Like what we did actually on a district level is we just did a series of town halls or informationals throughout all of Dallas-Fort Worth. We went from North Dallas to South Dallas to East to West, where we had an SB4/DACA informational. And we worked with the Dallas County colleges. And they opened their doors to us, and we just did these receptions where we actually worked with the Mexican consulate here in Dallas. Nice. A couple of lawyers. Monica Lira Bravo was one of our big sponsors, and she was one of our speakers. And Proyecto Inmigrante, which is a nonprofit that works with immigrant groups here. And we opened the doors, and we just did an informational. It was like, come in, we're going to give you a legal overview of SB4 and DACA, what they are and where they're at now. Then we introduced some of the different organizations that were offering assistance, and then we did a consult time. And our first wow. one, we opened the doors in Pine Grove, and I think we had something about 85 people show up. And this Saturday coming up on the 30th, we're going to have our last one, which is going to be in the Bachman area at the Bachman Recreation Center. And we're looking at having probably something around the same turnout there. But these have progressively been growing and getting bigger as people know that we're introducing them to, you know, different groups and different lawyers that are willing to reach out and help with anything that they have going on.
That's amazing. And it sounds like you have incredible hyper local support with Dallas. And I'm obviously biased because my sister lives there too. And I love the city. And just gentle plug, she had 55 kids at the first LULAC meeting of the school year at North Dallas High School. So very exciting.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, I'm curious.
Crazy about that?
What?
We didn't even know that that council was being formed or existed yet. They did wow. that on their own. They reached out this year, and ever since we found out, we're like, okay, where do we go? How do we pick these guys up? Like, where do we get involved with them? How can we work with them? Knowing that they're so close to us and there's so many of them, you know, it's amazing. I will say the temperament of everything that happens today, the only thing I can say is we are building some amazing leaders that are going to come in the future. These high school and college students, they are learning at a very early age what it means to stand up and speak out and to do things not only in a visible way, but in a way that matters, you know? So I'm really excited. I just had to put that plug in there because North Dallas LULAC, I think that's a group to watch.
I'm so excited too. And I think that also there's just, what's crazy is the meeting was at 7:45 in the morning. So these high schoolers got up an extra hour and a half before school. And I was mm-hmm. like, I mean, when I was in high school, I was sleeping until the last minute. Like, my mom had to drag me out of bed to get to school.
When you were in high school, that's a habit I've held to this day.
But so it sounds like, you know, circling back, it sounds like you've got great support in Dallas. But I have to ask, you're in the middle of like a red, red state. And so how do you navigate that? Or has it not come up immensely yet? Or, you know, what's it like to be within that ecosystem?
You know, here's the funny thing about Texas. We're huge. If you take Texas and you set it on top of another piece of a map, you'll see that the span of Texas is the span of countries and some other places, you know. So Dallas, we're blue. Austin is blue. San Antonio is blue. Our major cities are blue. It's everything around us that's red. So a lot of times the big metropolitan areas, we don't get as affected by some of the stuff that's going on. Now, me being me and working with the people I work with, we are very quick to jump out there and we'll all get in our cars and head to Fort Worth and head to Rockwall and Rowlett, which we've done recently, especially here in the last year talking about the bathroom bill. We're real quick to pack it up and take it to some of these small suburbs and get out there and, you know, make our voices heard. The good thing is that we work as a community. You know, anywhere that LULAC goes, I know that the Stonewall Democrats will be there. I know that Planned Parenthood will be there. I know that, you know, all these other organizations, we stand in support of each other because we've come to the realization that, you know, the ones that are coming for us, the ones who are coming for immigrant rights, the ones who are coming for, you know, women's rights, the ones who are coming for all these different things, they're the same people.
Sure.
It's one in the same. That mm-hmm. one politician that's pushing for this, this, and this, he's attacking all of us at once, or they're attacking all of us at once. So we've learned to kind of stand with each other and have each other's backs. Here lately, what I'll say is that we have done a really good job of not only reaching out to those groups kind of that were more liberal and to the left, but we've also started crossing communities of faith. Mm. A lot of the churches, the temples, the different places of worship here have begun to come together in solidarity. We've been working closely with the Muslim community when they were being affected by this ban that was put up. You know, we were working with them, trying to send out our lawyers, standing in the airports, doing our protests and doing everything that we could. And then after all that was over, sitting down together at a table and having that conversation and saying, now, what do we do together to get in front of the people that are going to make a difference? So you're right. I mean, the community here, the power that we have here in Dallas working together, it's amazing.
That's great. That's great. And I love the idea of the follow-up, because I feel like so frequently, you know, something happens and there's a huge, everybody's eyes are open for like a week, and then it changes or the conversation shifts and everybody's like, okay, they're fine now. But I love that, you know, LULAC is prioritizing follow-up and next steps, you know, to make sure that it's consistent, because it's so important.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're there. We make it to the parades. We make it to the walkouts, the marches, the protests, anything that we need to be at. We're there. But we also, in that moment, we engage those people, because people go out because they're passionate, because there's emotion that's involved. They're angry. They're mad. They're sad. They're scared. That's why they hit those streets. But they don't know where to direct it. So a lot of times we do that follow-up, like you said, and we say, okay, you know, after this parade, here's what's going to happen next. We're going to have our next monthly meeting, and we're bringing in this speaker to talk about this. Or we're going to set up, you know, an informational. We're going to set up a class. We're going to send up something so that we can teach you. Now, are you registered to vote? Where do you go vote? How can you educate other people on how to vote, how to register, where to do that? You know, we set up so that people can be deputized so that they can register other people to vote. Because we always tell them, you know, it's great. In that moment, you might take a really awesome picture standing up, you know, with your protest sign. But what did you do afterwards? What was your follow-up, and how did you push that agenda to make this something that was not only going to be visibly, but it was going to matter on the back end? You know, how did you continue that fight?
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, with all, you know, the events and driving to things and helping out with a lot of groups, it's tiring after a while. So how do you take care of yourself? How do volunteers, what's your recommendation for people that are putting themselves on the line every day? How do you take care of yourselves?
So here's the thing with that. I'm exhausted. Tired right now. But we do tell everybody, you know, you have to pick your battles sometimes. The way that things are nowadays, today at this moment, there is probably a protest wherever you are. There's probably one wherever I am. There is always some type of protest going on. You have to pick the ones that matter to you. You have to pick and choose your fights. And then you got to sit back sometimes, you know. I plan my stuff out, and sometimes my schedule gets hectic, but I always try to make at least some kind of room in there to disconnect for a moment and to sit back and spend time with my family and spend time with my husband and just kind of have, you know, at least a day or two to kind of just relax and take that off the table. You know, not only that, I have a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I work, wow, you know, 40-hour job. It's nothing to do with this. And I'm also a student. So wow. I have to make time to make sure I get my homework done, I get my stuff done, you know, and then I turn around and I do this. So it's a lot of time management is what it is. But it's also a lot of knowing your limits and setting up those boundaries and saying, okay, I'm going to have to miss this because I have to sit back and take a moment for myself. But that's the other thing about it in this community. The good thing is that if I'm going to miss something, if I can't be there, I know that I can call on some other people and say, hey, you know, I can't be there. Can you be there in my place? Can you catch me up on what's happening? You know, it's your turn to go this time, and you bring me in. That's why we all have our specialties. You know, we work with Stonewall Democrats and Planned Parenthood are two of the big ones, the Mexican consulate here. So I always know that if I miss something, I can go back and say, okay, Planned Parenthood, educate me on what happened here with, you know, the women's rights or women's reproductive care or whatever. You know, teach me what I missed so that I can stand next to you and have an understanding.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I love that because I think it was one of my coworkers once that pointed it out to me. I was having one of those days where it was like I was trying to do 150 things. And she was like, hey, Emily, you can't help someone having a heart attack if you're also having a heart attack. And I was like, oh, so I do need to sleep tonight. But, okay, cool. Great. Thank you. And so I think that's really important for people to hear is that even those that, you know, you're operating at 150% all the time, but even people like you who are hyper involved need that retreat time, that, you know, sleep time, let the subconscious work on it a little bit. So it's great to hear for everybody, I think.
Yeah, it's been something important. You know, I hear that all the time. I do a lot. Social justice is one of the things that I do, but I'm also a recovered addict. And so I work with people, you know, I like to give my time, kind of telling my story, giving my experience, strength and hope. And that's a passion of mine. And I have this tendency to take people in, literally, into my home. Mm-hmm, wow. And I get in trouble for that often. But, you know,
I'm sure your husband's very happy when that happens.
You put it out there.
Your husband's like, why are there 15 people at dinner? And you're like, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, you know, we got this extra room for a reason.
That's
yeah.
right. That's so funny.
So I do notice that on the website, you guys do offer applications for people that want to create a chapter or charter, rather. So is that the easiest way to start getting involved with LULAC?
Starting a chapter?
Yeah.
Oh, that's no.
No, it's not.
That's when you want to take on a lot. That's like actually creating the chapter and getting it going. You know, find the chapter that's close to you and begin participating in whatever events that... And here's my suggestion to anybody that's getting into social justice. Find the things that matter to you to begin with. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're all about women's rights, if you're all about immigrants' rights, start with that. Once you become an expert on that, you'll see the intersections. You'll see where the other stuff comes in. And that's when you begin to learn about it and you begin to say, okay, you know what? This ties into this and these things are put together under this law or this amendment or this bill. And it's this politician that's pushing it. And that's where you start to learn the patterns. That's where you start to learn everything. But, you know, that's the best thing you can do, though, is because I've seen people kind of get into it and they're like, oh, I'm here because, you know, I'm scared of SB4, and then they're at everything and it's like they wear themselves out. So do right. what matters most to you in the beginning and you'll start to see, you'll see how your passion kind of unfolds.
Amazing. Well, Lex, I'm so happy I met you just a few days ago, and selfishly I'm very thankful for what you do for my sister's school. But also on the larger scale, I think what you do is incredibly important. And we were so honored to have you on.
Yeah, but, thank you so much for coming on.
You know, I mean, aside from finding your local council and finding what you're passionate about, do you have any other pieces of advice for our listeners?
Yeah, if you're in Dallas, hit me up. Facebook always got something going on. but other than that, you know, just stick to your passion. And my one thing that I ask everybody is, you know, speak up. Say what you can say and stand up for the right, because silence is just as bad as being on the other side. You know, it gives them that opportunity to kind of get in there and sway your opinion. So if you see something, say something. Yeah. You know, yep. Kind of the best thing that I can say for people is you may not be able to go out and march, but, you know, say something. Let people know where you stand and let them know what side you're on.
Nice.
Great.
Great.
I love that.
Well, thank you so much. Again, check him out, Alejandro Lex Trevino. If you guys want to get involved, look at lulac.org. That's LULAC.org. Thank you so much for coming on again. If you want to check us out at We Rebel on iTunes, whatsacreative.com, Twitter, We Rebel Podcast, werebelpodcast@gmail.com, or We Rebel Podcast on Instagram, and probably a bunch of other weird social media sites that I don't know about. So,
thanks, MySpace. Everybody.
Yes. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?